Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. My name is Melitza and I'm your host. Welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours that we have. You have young children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to Raising Playful Tots, show number 67. Thanks for listening to the show today. If you're new here, welcome to the show and hi to the regular playmates. There's plenty of room with printing stamps over here. Last podcast, I interviewed Karen Nemeth, an educator, consultant and trainer with more than 25 years experience on meeting the needs of children from different language backgrounds and their families. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at www.raisingplayfultots.com/shows. Usually, once a month, there's a show that's just me, no interview. This week's show is called Five Places for Unexpected Playtime and Learning Experiences. That's coming up in today's show. I hope you'll stick around. If you have comments about the show, want to share your play activities, then try the Facebook page, Twitter, comment at the website, as I have show notes for each show. Let me know what you'd really love to hear more about. My email is melitza@raisingplayfultots.com. That's M-E-L-I-T-S-A. I'll be right back after this short break.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. It's been one of those weeks. One of those weeks where you've had a really big high and a really big low. The really big high was that a friend called early one morning and said that she'd won tickets to the local show. It's a huge show that goes on for about 3 days and almost brings the whole area to a standstill. And I was really excited because we could all go. I could take all three children. We had to call into school and request the day off to see if we'd get an authorized absence. But we decided to take the responsibility for that, and we called in and asked, and we were told that we would be given the answer later on. Quite a few other children had done the same. The whole idea about going to this huge show was that the children could experience things that they wouldn't normally experience in class. And to see all three of them interacting with their other friends and the amount of other children were there, it was just amazing. We saw lots of different animals. They had no idea how many different pigs you could get, and they saw which ones won. And all the different animals and what they could do, we saw cows, sheep, pigs, all up close and personal. You could touch them, you could smell them, you could see what came out of their bottom, which all the children wanted to tell you about. You could smell what was going on, and a few times, if you weren't looking where you were going, you would see one of those animals being led right past you. If you've ever stood next to a cow, you'll know how small you feel. Those things are huge. They're really big. And they don't mess about when they're moving about, so you better move out the way. There were also some trucks that they could go into, or buses really, that had all the different things, and there was a milk one that they could go in, and they actually could milk a pretend cow. Oh, that was priceless, watching these children trying to pull the teats in the right way and do lots of puzzles and activities to do with milk production. There was an environmental area where they got to play and draw and colour and make and do. Oh, there was just tons of things that they could do and that spoke about their environment and where we live and the agricultural area in this area. Of course, lunchtime was fun because you got to go to the food court and samples. You could eat your way around and try all the local produce. There was even an area for our local county where just those things that were made in this local area, you could go and sample the produce. You had authors there, you had jewelry, all sorts of things. So you could see all the different things that your county could make. So I would really encourage you, if you have a local county fair, it's hard work. I took all three children with a friend of mine, and she had her two children, and it was packed. Prince Charles and his wife came to the show, so you can imagine it was super busy because everybody wanted to see them. We didn't see them. We saw the royal helicopter later on as we were leaving. But it was really, really busy, and it was a lot of hard work. But sitting at the dinner table that night, talking about the fair, and asking them what did they like the best, they had so many things to say that the dinner got cold with the amount of things they were tripping over each other to tell you all about all the things that were happening. It was a good time for the 8-year-old, the 5-year-old, and the 2.5-year-old. I think they got quite a lot out of it. The youngest one, who's going to be 3 very soon, he probably won't remember much of it. He's got the experience of going, but he probably won't remember much. But certainly the older two will remember what went on. And it was actually a really nice day. It was about 16 degrees, so it wasn't really hot to walk around. I'd much rather that with a huge big crowd because, you know, inside it'll be warm with all the people and it was crowded as you walked around, but at least it didn't rain, which is great for England because it looked like it was going to rain quite a few times and it didn't. So if you can do it, go to a local county fair. It really gives you so many more things to talk about. The sad thing that really happened this week that is still really affecting me is that late on in the week, we were burgled. We had people that came into our house and took a whole bunch of things while we were in the house. I didn't know anything about it, and it's really, really, really shaken me to think that somebody came into the house. Not the why would anybody do that, but just somebody's in. I know that people do these things. It's just difficult to keep going and not to be worrying constantly that they're going to come back or that they're going to come back, you know, full stop. And it's really shaken me from getting into my routine and doing my normal things, because as a mum, you have to just keep going, don't you? It happened one school morning. I woke up the morning and it had happened the night. And trying to keep the children away from certain areas, calling the police, having the scenes of crime come round and do all the dusting and the fingerprinting and the endless questions and calling people to come and pick up the kids and take them to school. It was just, it was horrendous, really bad. And it made me, I think, a lot more snappy and a lot more on edge. And not explaining that to the children was difficult, because you just wonder, what do you say and what do you not say? And we've gone with the line of not saying just yet. They've not asked and we've not said, although I'm sure they could tell that I was a little on edge these past couple of days. And I'm working really hard on moving forward so that it doesn't affect things going on. But it's difficult, really difficult. And it made me think, you know, the boys are a little on edge. This is the last week of school term and it's summer term and we're in July. So this is July, the week of the 17th of July. They're tired. They're just really tired. And so they're snappy at each other too, or maybe they're picking up from me. But, you know, we're all tired. We've all got stuff going on. And, you know, this podcast is about raising playful tots, and I just thought it would be interesting to share with you where we are and what we can do to kind of move ourselves forward when we're in a difficult position. Knowing how I feel right now about things and knowing that I have to move away from this place, I just thought, okay, I'm going to change the way we do chores this week. I'm going to introduce one chore, a new chore. It sounds funny because the word chore makes the next thing I say really odd. But I'm going to ask them to do one random act of kindness to each other. Because they're really good at hitting each other at the moment and not being very playful and being really cross with each other really quickly, quicker than they usually are. And yeah, I know that they both respond really well when somebody does something really kind to them. So I'm going to ask them to try and do like one random act of kindness to either each other or that they've done at school. So maybe they, I don't know, pick up some paper at school that somebody else dropped and give it to them that they saw that they missed. Or maybe at home they pick up something that their brother could have done and that they do it without complaining. Wouldn't that be nice? And I'm going to ask at dinner time for them to tell me about it. They don't know about this yet, so this will be fun to start. I think it might be a nice way of us talking positively about things, talking positively to each other, because, you know, words hurt, and I want them to be a bit more playful and have a little bit more fun. We all need it right now. We all need the little boost to keep going, and I think that that would be a smashing idea to try. We already have, for those of you that don't know, I have a dinner time play activity set that I've been doing once a month. You can download a PDF of a whole group of activities that we've been doing in at dinner time. So you've got questions to start to have conversations about. We've got music that you can listen to. We've got a book to recommend that you can do together that involves the whole family. It's for family night and for dinner time play activities as well. So it gives you a chance to do something, maybe little bits each day, or a whole group for your family night activity. So we're going to try that this week, saying something positive about everybody else. And I'm hoping that will bring the levels up, make us all feel a little better and bring us out of this place and make us a bit more playful. Okay, on with the show. That was a little side note. 5 places for unexpected playtime and learning experiences. Usually we think of playtime and places to visit. We think of playgrounds and play spaces, especially in unseasonable weather like ballparks or indoor venues. Last year, everyone was talking about staycations because we couldn't afford to travel on usual summer holidays. Today, I want to talk to you about 5 places to go for unexpected playtime and learning. The church and the churchyard. Probably the most unusual of all the places in this list is to visit the local place of worship. It can be the familiar one on your doorstep in your neighborhood, you know, the one that you see each day as you go to preschool, the place where you buy your pumpkins in the autumn, or the curious building you've always wondered about. It's not a time for faith, although there will be people of faith there, and remembering to be respectful is probably one of the first things you'll end up talking about with the kids. Things to do include looking at the building, taking pictures outside. You may have to ask permission to look inside or to take pictures. Depending on where you are in the world, you can find churches that date back thousands and thousands of years, or even find really very modern buildings. Many think that a churchyard isn't the place for young children, and you'll have your own opinions about funerals and the like. It's also a really interesting place to see flowers, read words, recognize pictures and shapes, time for counting. While not for everyone, the churchyard also provides a time for stillness and contemplation that even the loudest toddler can appreciate the vastness of a cemetery. Culturally, we all have very different ideas about cemeteries and churchyards. But it does give us an opportunity to talk about all sorts of new and relevant vocabulary. We visited our local churchyard just recently and had a lovely time counting headstones. It was a time also that we learnt to be quiet around other people. Not that he learnt it straight away, like, bam, he's going to do it, but certainly it was a real occasion for him to practice, for the little one to understand the context of respect and stillness. And these are important issues that we need to have for our playful tots, is that we have to give them opportunities to try out things like being quiet and being still and in a proper environment for that to see why you need to do that. And he could see really quite well because there were a few people that were walking in the churchyard that were carrying flowers and were clearly, I think, going to other people's gravesides. So we had to be respectful and thoughtful and making sure that we didn't run across the graves, and we could walk and we can look and we could have a conversation. The second idea is a rough patch of ground. Now, we all have one of these somewhere. Maybe it's at the bottom of the garden, that little gap between your garden and somebody else's garden, there's a little rough patch of grass. Maybe there's an area nearby that you know that's just rough and unloved. Maybe an overgrown allotment or waste ground between the stores. Where we lived in Colorado, a patch of land was sold off to build a Sprout, which is a huge indoor market, farmer's market, or giant greengrocers. But the land was divided, and a small part was left for future development for a church, I think. That's what the sign said outside. In the meantime, since it wasn't blocked off, regularly people walked through the area to get to the supermarket. And taking a child through there was a bit like the part when you're going on a bear hunt. You remember that story? When they go through the tall grass and it's swishy, swashy, swishy, swashy. The grass is really quite tall. And the older boys mentioned it one day as we were taking the shortcut too. And we all thought about it every time we went over the grass for some must-have item from the shop. Anyway, looking in the grass was exciting. I don't really think that there might be snakes, as we were told sometime later. So I guess it pays to know your area before you go off gallivanting. We've always seen bugs and other creatures. We pretend we're swimming through the grass, and the grass was knee-high to the toddlers and the younger children. It was proper hard work walking through the uneven ground to get there, and even better when it was wet and squelchy because of the mud. We did take a magnifying glass, but we were careful about sunlight because we didn't want to start any fires, because Colorado is a very, very dry area, so we were very careful. And we started pretend play ideas, like wading through the sand, or we would pretend that we were swimming through the ocean, or we were in an undiscovered land was another one. Or in search of the Gruffalo or the spiffiest giant in town, some character from a book that we were doing. And the fun about doing an activity like this was it was short. It was on our way through to something. So we had, you know, 4 or 5 minutes of walk through this patch of ground, and that was it that we could pretend. And then we were on the other side and we were kind of back to normal until we were leaving and going back again. The third activity that I would suggest is visit a new part of town. Now, you probably think, well, I know everything about the town that I live in, but have you ever really got yourself lost in your own town? If you're anything like most people, you go to the same places to do the same things because, you know, frankly, we just don't have a lot of time. So you know where you're going and you go there, but there are going to be side streets, roads, areas that you've never been down before. Actually, take the time, get lost in your own town, go down the streets you've never been down before, dawdle, 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 look around and discover. Park the car in a different area and explore. Number 4, supermarket. This is another place that we tend to go to. I'm in a hurry at a supermarket, I just get in, get out. With the kids in tow, that's not always as simple. The trolley is a perfect height for them to whip random things off the shelves. Now, I know that my child is not the only child to do this. Please tell me. Please tell me that that's true. There are probably some gems you'd love to stop and read about more. You know, those ultra-healthy snack items your friend recommended you that you'd love for your little one to have because when they're at their house, they ate all of them, or you saw something special yourself when you wanted to try, actually go to the supermarket at a time when you don't need to be there and allow yourself a trip that's a learning experience. You're popping in for a kilo of apples and yogurt and a box of tissues. Take it slow and have a look at things. Take them off the shelf and describe them. Now, my little one is a big fan of that everyday items book from Osborne. You know, when you have a picture, it's a book full of pictures with everyday scenes with the vocabulary all around the edge. And you have to find the object on the outside and it's the same as a picture on the inside. So it could be a farm and you have to find the farmer's wife or the tractor. And it says the word and a little picture at the bottom and you have to look in the main picture to find it. He's a huge fan of that. And you can actually take that same concept and actually make it into a real activity. So you can go down the supermarket and say, where's the apple? And you can actually show the apple and see where it is. What color is the ketchup? As you're looking at the ketchup, as you're going down that aisle, and this is a green container and this is a red container. There's so many things that you actually really can do if you can stop and take the time when you're not actually in a hurry. And can you see the little man if you're pointing to some container that has a picture of something on that? Or you can smell the pineapple if it's prickly. You can touch it also, well, carefully, and you can see what's there. Now, I know some of you are thinking, oh no, you can't handle the produce that you're not going to use, and you've seen other people handling it, and you're just thinking of other kids and what they've been doing to it. And it makes me think of a time when we were in Italy. They use plastic gloves to hold the fruit and vegetables. You need to put the gloves on, and there's tons of them right by those weighing scales. And you use those gloves, the plastic gloves, to pick up your fruit and vegetables and see which ones you want before you put them in those plastic bags and weigh them and print out your lovely little sticker that tells you how much it weighs and how much it costs. And it makes sense to us. It's something I really wish that they did elsewhere because we're so conditioned to doing it now that we now just use the inside of a plastic bag because that's what we have. I'm not going to walk around with plastic gloves. And we can pick up vegetables. And so I'm excited now because I can share the fruits and the vegetables and I can bring them over. And I feel that it's, if I want to put it back, I haven't been handling it with my bare hands. What other people have done, I can't tell. Obviously, we wash our fruits and vegetables afterwards. But that's one way around that you can think of doing. And in fact, we had a fun time with Sharon fruit just this week. I've never had Sharon fruit that I would remember. Maybe I have. And I saw some ripe ones today when we were shopping and we picked them and set them out for the kids and we smelt them and they looked good. We wondered what it would taste like and we all just had a taste and it was great. I would really recommend it. I don't know how you say the other one. I think it's persimmons is the other name for it. Too. They're from Israel and South Africa, I believe. Well worth a try. Another one that I think of is neighbor. Now, this is a really odd one. The little one still loves to run away when you call him. He regularly runs onto other people's lawns and he's curious about something. He goes down the path. He's fast, too fast. So I'm often trying to cajole him back without tramping over someone else's garden. The biggest fascination are the homes in our immediate neighborhood. He's there saying hi to the neighbors and smelling their flowers, and they're all really nice, I must say. Every time we're going to get into the car, we have this, because of the nature of the door, me having to close and lock it and getting the kids out and the car being outside means that there's a brief time when he has the capacity to bolt. Usually I'm holding his hands and locking the door. But, you know, with two other children and everything else that's going on, sometimes he has that chance. There's a longer pathway for him to get to the car. But I can't tell you the amount of times I have abandoned closing the door to chase him at full tilt on a bid for... he's been on a bid to freedom somewhere else. Grab him and then go back and lock the door. It all came to a head the week before last, as it was just a matter of time. Whichever side door I open for the car, he wants to go round and get in the other side. You know, independence and the toddler. school pickup time, 5 minutes to get to the parking spot, otherwise I wouldn't get a place and be on time. We're out the door. He stays. Yes, I'm really excited. Great. I'm juggling some snacks, a bag, my iPod. The little one has stopped to smell the flowers. Great, great. I can lock the door. I get to the open door, get to the door of the car to open it, and he gets in. Great. Everything's going really well. I put my stuff down, and I click the unlock all as he turns around and comes back out of the car and bolts for freedom. So I slam the door shut, and I rush around to grab him. Get to the car, my purse, my phone, and my nice shiny keys smile sweetly at me from behind a locked door. I must have pressed the wrong button. So I've got 3 minutes until I lose a good place to park, 5 minutes until the middle one finishes school, and 10 minutes until the big guy finishes school. All my contacts are inside the car. The door to the house is locked. And what's that? A light sprinkling of rain. I stood there by my car, looking across the street, and went to see my neighbour. Lovely, lovely, lovely couple. We've met before, and all that furious waving and hellos were not in vain. There's something about being in a house that's like your house, but not your house, that's really interesting. And that's not just for adults, it's for the kids too. My neighbour kindly dropped me at school and we fetched the boys. Yes, he had to circle because there were no spaces left. I got into the house within the hour. Thank goodness for contact syncing online. I was able to call people. Of course, all the boys think across the street is the place to go now because they had biscuits, TV and undivided attention. I'm not suggesting locking your keys in the car to get to know your neighbours. We had an unexpected learning experience. It was lovely to hear the boys saying thank you and the yes pleases. They weren't mounting the couch and running around like hooligans, like I'm sure, well, like I know that they can do here at home. And generally, they did the right thing. I did catch one saying, "Can I have a look around upstairs, please?" As he tried going to the stairs, they were really good about it, and I diverted him as I tried to find help for our locked out status. I wanted to share today some real experiences about having playtime and learning experiences. Some of them are unexpected and some of them are deliberately designed. Play and learning happens anywhere and when you least expect it. Some of these places may not be suitable for you and you really have to adapt everything to suit your circumstances. And some even may be dangerous for you, so you really have to think what will work really well for your family. I'd encourage you, though, to look for play in different places and not be constrained to the usual places. See play differently. I'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Becky Goddard-Hill from babybudgeting.co.uk, and you're listening to Raising Playful Talk.
Thanks for listening to the show today. If you have any ideas and experiences for me or advice for some of the things that we've mentioned in today's show, then you can contact me by going to the website. That's raisingplayfultots.com. There you'll find ways you can interact with me, like on Twitter, Facebook, via a contact form. You can be in touch with other people while you're there too. There's lots of information and resources there. We have interviews, resources, links, play activities via the Raising Playful Tots Index. We have search facilities so you can look up ideas that you have that you want to see more of. You can submit your ideas too. I'm very interested in what you would like to hear about and what you want to talk about with Raising a Playful Tot too. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 67. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.